Welcome to you, old friends and new, young and old. You are an essential part of our celebration today. Whether this is your first or your thousandth Sunday in our midst, we are stronger together because you are with us. We are one people of many beliefs, many origins, sexualities, and genders. We are all growing, all learning, all loved. Just as you are welcome here. I'm Reverend Bob LaValle. I'm the Associate Minister at First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, and I'm delighted to be joined here today by our Music Director, Susan Peck, and our Worship Leader, Casey Spivey. Our DJ today is our Tech Arts Director, Chris Paul, and our Tech Team is Cy Schuster, Michaela Renz Whitmore, Erica Johnson Jimenez, Jordan Jones, and Vance Bass, and we couldn't do it without you. I also want to give a special thanks to Reverend Katie Colbert of Tampa, Florida, who did today's Time for All Ages. And now Casey has an announcement.
Good morning, friends. Two announcements. Today, we welcome Peter Simonson, the Executive Director of our Change for the Future recipient this quarter, the ACLU of New Mexico. Following this service, those interested in speaking with Peter should remain in the main room, and our technical support team will usher you into the ACLU breakout room. This is your chance to ask about the work of the New Mexico ACLU and to hear about their efforts on behalf of marginalized people in our state. Do you miss clubs and coffee houses? Come to the First U open mic today at 4 p.m. for an afternoon of music and poetry in a supportive space. You'll be amazed by all the talented folks in our midst. Login information is in the chat, or you can find it in this week's broadsheet. Thank you.
Let's kindle our chalices, shall we, here and at home? We're going to use the words of Reverend Barbara Hogan Gaddon today. In dining rooms and living rooms and kitchens and offices, we light this chalice. On patios and backyards and front porches, we light this chalice. From many homes, many neighborhoods in Albuquerque and beyond, we light this chalice. Many flames become one. With hands that are quick and hands that are slow, we light this chalice. With hearts that are heavy and hearts that are light, we light this chalice. With minds keen on learning and minds that need some rest, we light this chalice. Many flames become one. Gather around this flame, brighter than any that we could create by ourselves. May it be a beacon in the darkness and warmth in the cold for this community and for the world. Come, let us journey together.
Keep your heart wide open, though the waves wanna push you around. You gotta keep your heart wide open till your faith brings you back to solid ground. I'm gonna keep my heart wide open though these waves wanna push me around. waves wanna push me around,
I'm gonna keep my heart.
I'm gonna keep
wide open.
I'm gonna keep my heart wide open
till my faith
brings me back,
brings me back
to solid ground.
Until my faith brings me back to solid ground.
We gotta keep,
we gotta keep
our heart.
We gotta keep
wide open.
We gotta keep our hearts wide open.
Through these waves,
wanna put
us around.
Through these waves, wanna push us around.
We gotta keep,
we gotta keep
our heart.
We gotta keep
wide
open
till our
faith
brings us back.
Brings us back
to solid ground.
Till our faith brings us back to solid ground.
Say hi.
Hello, my name is Elias, and will you join me for the Children's Affirmation? We are Unitarian Universalists. We are people of faith with open minds, loving hearts, helping hands.
Good morning. Today's story is a fable. A fable is a short story with a lesson or a moral. Many fables' characters are animals with human traits. I love animals. You probably love animals too. I thought I would tell you just a little quick bit of information about the author of this fable. So I did some investigation. Thank you, interwebs. And I discovered that Aesop, who is accredited with this fable, might not have been just one person, but several. So I looked at the Encyclopedia Britannica, which is what many of us used when we had to look up information when we were younger doing research papers. And I remind my teenagers of this on a constant basis when they complain about having to do research on the internet, that we had to either go to the library, look at the card catalog, or we had a set of encyclopedias. It's a very reliable source. So the Encyclopedia Britannica on the internet says that it's possible that the author known as Aesop lived in the 6th century BCE, which is before the Common Era, and was a slave. Or perhaps he was an advisor to a king, or maybe he was from Ethiopia, or from the island of Samos, who was freed from his master and became a riddle solver to another king in Babylon. I don't know what a riddle solver is, but I know I probably would not be very good at that job. I'm not very good with riddles. So my point being, it wasn't as simple of an answer as I was hoping for. The probability is that Aesop was a name invented to provide an author for fables that were centered on beasts, so that a story of Aesop became synonymous with fable. The beasts, or animals, who are featured in our story today are crows. Once upon a time, there was a great drought. It hadn't rained in a long time, and the water supply had run out. So two crows were flying around looking for water because they were so thirsty. They just wanted a drink. And they looked down and they discovered a pitcher in a garden. So here we have a pitcher right here. And they wondered if it had water in it. And it did. It had a little bit of water in it. So they perched on the edge and they looked in the pitcher, but they weren't able to get their beaks in far enough to the pitcher to get the water out. So that was super frustrating. One crow thought that the best way to try to get the water out was to push the pitcher over. So they tried and they kept on trying to push the pitcher over, but they weren't strong enough. They couldn't get the pitcher to pour over because it was too heavy. "I am done," said the crow. "I am done. This is way too hard. we should just give up and move on. The other crow didn't want to give up. I know you are tired, and I know you are thirsty, and I know that you are frustrated, but let's keep trying to think of a way to get at that water. Okay, I will stay and help. What should we try now? So the crow thunk and thunk and thunk. And then she had an idea. She flew over to a nearby field where there were several pebbles and stones and rocks. And the other crow followed her. And what she started to do was to take the rocks into her beak, fly over to the pitcher, and drop them into the pitcher, okay? So there were different sizes of rocks and pebbles and stones, and both of the crows started putting the rocks in the pitcher, and y'all see what's happening? As they did it, the water level rose and rose and rose even higher, all the way to the top of the pitcher. What do you think? One more? One more? All the way to the top of the pitcher. We did it! We finally did it! We can drink! And the two thirsty crows drank all the refreshing water and more, happy that they had stayed committed. They had stayed committed, and they had worked together to come up with a way to accomplish their goal. They had been creative to think about how they were going to get the water. The work we do as a people dedicated to creating a more fair and equal and just world can be exhausting and difficult. We will want to give up. I know I have wanted to give up. I have given up at times, but then we get back in it, right? We get back in it. Sometimes we think, you know what? I'm going to leave that work to somebody else, and I'm going to fly away and do something else. That's someone else's work to do. But we have to take responsibility. We have to take responsibility for the work. We have to take responsibility for ourselves, and we have to work together. We use our hearts, right? We use our hearts, we use our minds, and we use our spirits, and we think of new ways to tackle the problem. We quench our thirst for justice, and we provide relief to our beloveds who desperately, desperately need the life-giving water that is freedom. May it be so, and blessed be.
Really appreciating that. Let's pause the chat for a few moments during the meditation and prayer. We'll turn it back on during the joys and concerns. Will you join me in the spirit of meditation? Intentional silence has the power to give us perspectives on ourselves. In that quiet moment, our blind spots and our sore spots may be perceived and received with tenderness and compassion. In that spirit, we join together in silence for 2 minutes.
joys and concerns, our braided energies in each life. When shared out of vulnerable trust, these weave our covenant journey into a stronger, sensitive community as we listen deeply to attune to each one's pilgrimage. Please use the chat bar to share first your joys and then your concerns. If you are unable to post in the chat bar, please call the church office or email caring@uuabq.org. Leave word of how we may support you in these times. We now share from our daily lives as prompted.
All these joys and concerns, plus the joys and concerns held in our hearts, unspoken, but no less deeply felt. All these we lift up to the great powers of celebration and healing and renewal that are known by many names. Join me in prayer. We lift up Becky Steele, who recently was hurt in a car accident. May she feel the care of this congregation that holds her, and may her recovery be swift and comfortable. We lift up the victims of gun violence in this country and their loved ones. May this country abandon its unholy worship of guns. We pray for the people of Myanmar as they resist a military dictatorship. May they be safe and free. During this Passover celebration, we pray for the liberation of all peoples. May we see all the ways that we are enslaved, and may we work for our common freedom. And may we all be held in the heart of love. Peace be with you.
I know this rose will open. I know my fear will burn away. I know my soul will unfurl its wings. I know this rose will open.
Her reading this morning is David White's poem, Sometimes. Sometimes, if you move carefully through the forest, breathing like the ones in the old stories, who could cross a shimmering bed of leaves without a sound, you come to a place whose only task is to trouble you with tiny but frightening requests, conceived out of nowhere, but in this place, beginning to lead everywhere. Requests to stop what you are doing right now and to stop what you are becoming while you do it. Questions that can make or unmake a life. Questions that have patiently waited for you. Questions that have no right to go away.
What does it mean to live into our Unitarian Universalist values? There are a lot of ways to do that. This fall, 35 members of this congregation tried one important way. They signed up to participate in the beloved Conversations program. Folks have probably heard me talk about that program, how it lasted several months, how it used a combination of self-study and small group discussion and worship services to lead participants into a deeper understanding of their own racial identities and the dynamics that play out within and between racial groups. Program is explicitly Unitarian Universalist and is deeply rooted in the best of our principles and values. People participated in that program in racial caucuses. That is, white folks participated with white folks and people of color were with people of color. And this is because the needs of white folks are different from the needs of participants of color. So to help convey the experience of the participants from First Unitarian, I recorded a conversation with two of them, Cheryl Gutul and Arnie Golarud. And they don't speak for everybody who did the program, but I think their testimony is powerful and indicative of some common themes. And I want to thank them so very much for being willing to put themselves out there to share their thoughts. I really, really appreciate it. So one thing about this, we're going to watch a bunch of clips from that conversation, and you will quickly notice that I only interviewed white participants. And why did I do that? Well, we did have congregants of color from First Unitarian who participated in that program, but frankly, they are weary of having to educate their white peers. So I'll share some messages on their behalf and at their request later in the sermon. So the first question I asked Arnie and Cheryl was, what surprised you? What surprised you in that experience, in that Beloved Conversations experience?
I was very pleasantly surprised by the quantity and quality of the resources they provided. There were wonderful videos and things to read and music to listen to, all very good learning experiences.
Yeah, I loved how they gave a variety of media. It wasn't all just like reading web articles. There's poetry and songs and art even too. So they really understood the variety of learning styles, which I guess speaks to their understanding of cultural difference, you know? Mm-hmm. How about you, Arnie?
So the first thing that I think really surprised me about this, and I don't know why it surprised me, but it surprised me about how hard it was. It was very, very difficult.
Hard how?
So to me, the real expression of this is pointing out the extent to which it's challenging your core beliefs, mm-hmm. things that you just don't understand how they feel like central to yourself, mm-hmm. and yet at the same time are totally integrated into a web of a culture which is designed to be oppressive. Mm-hmm. And I can read all I want about it, but again, it was an amazing set of resources, but really embracing that this is one of the hardest things I've ever done. I've studied a lot of hard topics that other people that maybe aren't quite as hard for me as maybe other people, but this to me was really hard.
Were you surprised by the way it challenged what you understand as your identity?
Yeah, and I think actually one of the things that I think was most interestingly challenging about it is, so this is a UU group, and I don't know, I mean, we're all UUs, and we often feel like, oh yeah, I'm a UU, yeah, go me, I'm socially just, I'm awesome, I'm dig dug great, because I'm a UU. And this is not about how great we are. This is 100% not about how great we are at UUs, that all white people have a ton of stuff to work on. And I was really moved by the stories of these people who, I mean, you know, some of the people who are talking to us have been working in racial justice for decades, right? And they are telling us right now, they are embarrassed of how they have been in previous decades, right? These are people who, for whom this is their whole life, and they're still working it out. And I think that to me is a huge testament to just how challenging this is from a perspective of who you are and how you interact with the world and the kind of damage you do without knowing it.
And one of the things that surprised me was how they were warning us repeatedly that this would be difficult and to take care of ourselves emotionally and physically. And I kept waiting for the for the ball to drop and to feel so bad. And I didn't, but I think, and I hate to say this as a generational sort of thing, but I lived through the 60s. You know, I've been living this reality for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on it for a long time. I have a long way to go, but it didn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. What I was hearing, it just made me sad sometimes, but I felt it was very important to hear it and reconsider it or consider it anew.
Many folks who I spoke to from First Unitarian who did the program talked about having a sense of frustration because they find that every time they get to thinking deeply about racism or anti-racism, they feel like they're starting all over again. And I think this speaks to how challenging it is to re-examine our beliefs as our understanding continuously deepens. Let's go back to that question about how the experience challenged their sense of identity.
The good thing is, though, we're recognizing it now. We've learned more, and still have way more to learn. But we're it's hitting us in the face now instead of just going along and saying, "Oh yeah, that's the way it is," and we want to do something about it.
Yeah.
You mentioned that starting again kind of feeling. I may have told you this in the last conversation, but I was in a concert sometime before the COVID thing, and the one of the songs that the group sang was "We Shall Overcome" and invited the audience to join in it. Well, I sang that song in college with all my heart, believing that this was the end of racism. This was the end of, you know, terrible problems in our country because we were going to overcome this together. Well, when I sang that song a year ago, I cried because we hadn't overcome it. We hadn't made the progress we all thought was imminent. And we still had a long way to go. So in that sense, yeah, beginning again.
I know for me, you know, this is still kind of a new part. This isn't a huge, this has not been the focus of my life. And it's kind of interesting to, I'll get to that probably later, but I grew up in an academic community, university setting. And to me, it was extremely open and multiracial, multicultural. People from all over the world were studying together. And I felt like this real, but that's kind of a lie in university settings because it's a very special kind of person. They have to have adopted a whole lot of white supremacy before they're permitted in that wall, which is hard to see. Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful insight.
It's like these moments when you're like, oh yeah, we got this. We're higher education and we just get all these people of color to behave just like us and to write the papers like we want them. And then boom.
I think this is a really important lesson to consider as we here at First Unitarian strive to become a more inclusive church. We need to consider if there are requirements of whiteness that this church imposes on our members of color, just tacitly, are there unspoken expectations about dress, about speech, about clapping during services, about how kids should behave, about what is considered important. Every church, whether it acknowledges it or not, has a culture. And we need to consider whether our culture here at First U is truly welcoming or not. I then asked Arnie and Cheryl what they think they need next.
I know I need opportunities to be with, in a meaningful way, the BIPOC folks. I simply don't have those opportunities except through First Unitarian, but again, more than that, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. To me, the question is, how do I have authentic relationships with people right. of color? Not me coming in and say, hey, I heard that we're pressing you, I'm on your side. There were some amazing statements. There was one of the most moving things to me was an interview with, like, the thing he hated the most was when a white person came up to him and said, I'm your ally, right? Of just how awful that is and how awful it is when you have the liberal, white, well-meaning white people coming and said, I am, like, that specifically is as bad, if not worse, than the people who are explicitly avowing racism, right? That's us. That is us. That he does not want to talk to us because we are awful.
So Arnie is referring to an interview between Resma Monikem, who is the author of the fantastic book, My Grandmother's Hands, and Robin DiAngelo, who everyone knows from the white, everyone knows Robin DiAngelo. So, but when a white person, regardless of their intentions, approaches a person of color and leads with, let's talk about race, what that white person is doing is saying to that person of color that they only see their skin color, or that their skin color defines who they are. It flattens them into one specific part of their identity. It's dehumanizing, no matter what the intentions are. So let's go back to the conversation.
I was going to say, I think our culture, so, and I think about this in terms of, like, racial relations, and I do actually have a lot of folks at my workplace that are of various races, not anything representative of the breakdown of America, but yes, there is definitely, but in my personal life, in my church, in my friends, in my neighborhood, no, right? This is that moment when you realize culture and your own choices have made it, have walled you off. And so how do you unshackle that and make it be authentic?
So this is a really nuanced thing here that might be a little countercultural, but it's important here to consider the needs of everyone involved. I mean, to be honest, people of color don't need more practice being around white folks. You know, as minorities, they get that all the time. And as I've mentioned before, it's not their job to make white folks feel comfortable or help them understand or make them feel woke, whatever it is. Here's a really important thing that I believe deeply. Being an anti-racist church isn't about being a diverse church. Being anti-racist church means understanding our own identities and recognizing the ways that we've internalized white supremacy, all of us, and how we act that out. And Arnie articulates this well in the next clip.
So I've got one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
So there's still, right, okay, this is my challenge, right? That despite my self-loathing, powerful, potent part of me, there's often a sense of, like, I'm doing this right. You know what? I'm really trying to be just. I'm trying to be open to people. I'm trying to break down boundaries of age and all this stuff. I have these ideas in my head. and I think evidence, right? But the self is a very deceiving thing, right? There's nothing. We're very good at hiding our flaws in our own eyes, and so, you know, I'm left with this thing of like, okay, I want to have more authentic relationships. Well, what is it about the way that I have learned to interact with people in my white culture that get in the way of authentic relationships with people who are not from my culture, right? Or so like, where does this white supremacy creep in every conversation I have? How am I talking right now in ways that are embracing white supremacy that I cannot see?
I think that's really well put, Arnie. You know, the work of anti-racism has many pieces, many elements, but it includes interior transformation. It means examining our own lives in relation to others. We need to ask ourselves, how can I be transformed so that my relationship with others can be more healthy for all concerned? Well, I then asked Cheryl and Arnie how they think we should proceed as a congregation.
Well, I'm hoping all 35 have ideas on this course so that there's a multitude of things we could think about, plan, try.
So I guess there's two things in particular that I think about. And I think about, again, these moments that I've had these interactions and these statements by people of color in our own congregation who are realizing just, I mean, it's like they're being permitted to understand how much they are uncomfortable and how much our culture is not welcoming to them. And that they're used for reasons deeper than our community. And that is awful to me, right? That shock of realizing how we can be with people of color. Again, it's like beloved conversations where we're like twigged in, right? I mean, we're liberal, educated, blah, 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 whatever you want to say. We're the good whites. I just said that. But this training, beloved conversations, is about how we're not, right? How our community has a long ways to go. And so, you know, what do we need to do to be authentically an authentic place where a person of color is comfortable and feels welcome? And I can't even see how we're not, right? That's the real challenge. So that's one thing. And then one other thing is that it became a mantra almost in this class, is this wonderful discussion about being a brave space over a safe space. And I don't know, I mean, certainly I feel for myself and many other people I know, they come to UUism as a refuge from a society that they feel has very much not welcomed them. And I love that. I mean, the UUism as a refuge is a beautiful thing, but it needs, I need it to be at the next level where we are willing to let ourselves be transformed by it, instead of just finding it as a nice haven where we can feel sheltered. It actually calls us to something bigger. And learning how to be is something we don't necessarily know by default.
You know, Arnie's powerful comment reminds me of the Unitarian Universalist hymn, Bring Many Names. There's a line in one of the stanzas that goes, young growing God, eager still to know, willing to be changed by what you've started, willing to be changed by what you've started. It's a question we all need to ask ourselves as we move deeper and deeper into racial justice work. Are we willing to be changed by what we've started? Well, I've been charged by our People of Color Caucus here at First Unitarian to convey an important message. I've been asked by them to carry this message because the congregants of color in this congregation correctly see white racism as a white problem. So I'm speaking now with humility and love as a white person to the white members of this congregation. They want you to know that it's hard to be a person of color in this congregation. it's hard to be a person of color in this congregation. It's a lot better than it was 20 years ago, but to enter our spaces as a non-white person is to encounter microaggression after microaggression. Congregants of color sometimes feel like their identities are minimized on the one hand, while on the other hand, sometimes they're asked to speak for the entire Black or Latino or Asian community. They're tired and they're sometimes angry. You know, in church, we invite people to bring their whole selves, their most vulnerable selves, to the sacred space. And when someone carelessly says, "Oh, I don't see you as Latino," it hurts to the very core. It's a powerful vulnerability and a powerful risk. Our congregants of color love the Unitarian Universalist life-affirming theology, but the experience of being in church is challenging. White folks, I love you, and we need to do better. Now, the measure, as I said before, the measure of our anti-racist stance in this church isn't how many people of color belong to First Unitarian. Now, I hope that we can create such a welcoming, culturally competent church that people of color come to visit and they stay. But that's besides the point. That's a happy outcome of the real work. To paraphrase Reverend Mark Morrison Reed, if white congregations want to be diverse just because it makes them feel better about themselves, and I'm not saying that's what everybody here thinks, but if people just want to feel better about themselves, then they're just continuing to center the experience and feelings of white people. My prayer for this congregation is that we can center the experience and feelings of people of color and acknowledge that what really matters is how comfortable people of color are when they sit in First Unitarian's worship services and in its meetings and in its social gatherings. It's the experience of people of color that this congregation needs to focus on, not the comfort of white folks like me. I imagine this is painful to hear. I'm not saying that we white folks in this congregation have a character flaw or are selfish. What I'm saying is that because all of us have marinated in white supremacy all our lives, regardless of where we grew up, and because we marinated in that white supremacy, we have blind spots and we have habits unconsciously formed and still held to without our really knowing it. Now, our congregants of color tell me that they are encouraged by the work the people in this congregation are doing. They say that things are getting better, but we are far from there yet, and it's not up to them to lead the effort to change. It's up to us white folks. Where do we go from there? Where do we go from here? I don't know, and that's okay. The civil rights leaders in the 60s, they didn't exactly know what would work to change society, so they tried a bunch of things and they stuck to it, like the Crows. They had disagreements and setbacks, but they stuck to it. So I don't know. I don't know what to do next. But here's the thing. I don't know, but I think that we know as a congregation. I think that we know as a congregation. And by that, I mean that within our collective intelligence, within our collective imaginations, within our collective love lies the way forward. The desire for beloved community is strong in this congregation. It's so strong. You know, and I know that inspired by our Unitarian Universalist values and motivated by that love for this community, that love for each other, that love of justice, we'll move forward. Well, in this in the title of this sermon, I promise joy. But at this moment, maybe the best I can offer is hope. So I asked Arnie and Cheryl where they find hope?
Well, I think the fact that we can comprehend possibilities is hopeful. And the fact that there's a desire to do something.
Oh, to me, I feel actually a huge amount of hope in the way it changes our own hearts. And you know, we've done a lot of, I don't know. This is hard and it's really good. It's very important. Mm-hmm. I can feel that. And I can feel myself changing, right? And I can feel an openness to the kinds of things that people would say that were very challenging. And I was not necessarily willing to listen. And I know that that has changed a lot. That I can hear it now. I just have to figure out how to let it land in a constructive way. And that's also hard.
Yeah.
So I've learned a ton. And I think maybe one thing I would say is, as much as I've wondered whether or not it was worth it, it's worth it. It is so worth it. And I don't know where it's leading me, but it's leading me to somewhere.
I don't want this feeling to go away. I want to stay energized and, you know, and yes, disgusted and yes, you know, upset and all of that, but I don't want it to go away because I want to keep moving forward and doing whatever can be done to help.
There's hope. Hey, I want to repeat my thanks to Cheryl and Arnie who put themselves out there so we could learn from all their experiences. They really took a big risk jumping into this messy and fraught subject. And I'm grateful for their courage and their candor. And if folks have issues with anything they said, I hope that they include me in those conversations. So I want to say seriously, thank you, Cheryl and Arnie. So in our reading today, we're reminded by David White, ironically, the poet, we're reminded that there are questions that have no right to go away. This is where we find ourselves now. It's hard, but there is so much beauty and grace in this work. May we continue to answer the questions that are asked of us. Amen, and blessed be.
Through the months of February, March, and April, our Change for the Future recipient is the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico. The ACLU of New Mexico protects and advances justice, liberty, and equity as guaranteed by the constitutions of New Mexico and the United States. It is especially focused on groups that have been historically disenfranchised. Today, you can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat box. And if you prefer not to give online, you can simply mail a check to the church and include Change for the Future on the memo line. Let us now exercise the enduring power of generosity.
Building
What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque. And thank you on behalf of the ACLU of New Mexico. And I want to remind you that we're fortunate today to have Peter Simonson from the New Mexico ACLU. He's the executive director, the big kahuna. He's with us today after the service. And if you'd like to speak with him, just remain in the main room after the credits until the credits finish, and we'll place you in a breakout room with him. And looking forward to that conversation. Let's extinguish our chalices. Oh, wait, before we do that, another thing about the breakout rooms, we always offer a prompt for questions. So our prompt for today is, what interior work do you need to do to become more anti-racist? What's the inside piece that you need to do to become more anti-racist? And I put that in the chat. Now let's extinguish our chalices. The desire for beloved community is strong in this congregation. Inspired by our Unitarian Universalist values and motivated by love for each other, may we move forward as one. Go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love.